Welcome. This is Robert Rogers. I'm from Parkinson's Recovery, and it's my pleasure today to present the capstone step, step five, that is the essential step to be able to recover from the symptoms of Parkinson's. Welcome to this teleseminar today. The first step of recovery is the important step of focus. The second step that I discussed is the important step of being able to detail out and materialize what it is that you have set your heart's intention to accomplish. The third step of the recovery process is to stay on track. The fourth step is to keep the faith, to know that, in fact, it will happen. The fifth step, the step that I am talking about today, is the most important step of persistence. We all, I believe, have challenges with one or more of these five steps. They really are the key to manifesting anything in life, and particularly manifesting relief from the symptoms of Parkinson's. They all have to do with right thinking, so that when our thoughts are in order, when our thoughts are positive, we are able to manifest what we set our intention to manifest. I'd like to be personal at the outset of this discussion and talk about the challenges that I have had with the steps. My personal challenge is the third, to stay on track. And I suspect if you did some soul searching, you would identify that one or more of these steps is also a challenge for you. So before I really focus in and talk about persistence, I'd like to talk about issues that I've had with basically staying on track. I find that I launch a program and am easily diverted into doing something else. So being able to, for me, stay on program is a true challenge indeed. I have set my intention to be able to manifest the first 100 study. That's really what I am most interested and passionate about. So I, in the work that I have personally done in developing this teleseminar series, this five-session teleseminar series, I have focused my attention and energies on making sure that I will be able to identify somewhere out there in the universe funding and support to do a study of 100 individuals who have been diagnosed with Parkinson's and be able to introduce a wide variety of therapies and modalities that will support their recovery, and to document the fact that, yes, it is possible for people not only to feel better, not only to get relief from symptoms, but to see full symptom relief as long as there has been a focus on their intent to actually recover. So that's my issue, that's my challenge, but as it turns out, the fifth step of persistence is a step that I do quite well. And I'd like to be able to talk about that in a personal sense, just to give you a flavor for how challenging persistence can be for us sometimes. If you look at my own personal history, or if you read a short biography that I might write about myself, it looks like everything has been easy in my life. I've graduated from outstanding universities with an undergraduate degree from Vanderbilt University, a master's degree from Cornell, which is an Ivy League school, and my PhD is from a Big Ten university, Michigan State University. So on its face, it looks like, well, snap, 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 this guy had no problems getting through all of his formal educational programs. Well, as you can well imagine, anything but that is the truth. I could give you story after story of challenges that I have confronted in just being able to get through my academic programs. The one I'll pass to you, which is poignant, is the challenge I had with being able to essentially pass through what is called the qualifying exams for my PhD program at Michigan State University. I did all that was required in terms of taking coursework and prepared for my qualifying exams to be advanced to candidacy, which would qualify me to then write my dissertation under the guidance of my committee. I went before the examining committee, and after a couple of hours of grueling questions, they decided that I needed to have some more coursework and some more formal preparation. So I said, okay, that would be just fine, because I am determined to be able to be awarded the PhD so that I can do research. So I did more coursework, and I came back for my second examination, went before the very same examining committee of professors. And after a couple of hours, they decided that they thought that they were unclear about whether or not they wanted to advance me to candidacy. It appeared as though I was still deficient in one or two of the subject areas that I thought I needed to know more about. Well, I was determined. I didn't care who said what, that I was going to earn my PhD from that university. So I basically went back to the committee several weeks later and said, I'm ready to do this. I really am qualified to be able to be advanced. And I insisted on having a third examination. And they decided, fine, we'll go ahead and do it again. And on that third examination, after, again, a couple of hours, they decided, yes, they thought that I was ready to be advanced to candidacy. I've had many, many situations in my life that have essentially been huge disappointments, and I guess you could call them failures. When I actually became a professor at the University of Texas and then at the University of Kentucky, time after time I would submit a journal article to a what we would call perhaps a Class B journal, only to be turned down, to be told that that was not an acceptable article. And I would just simply, through my knack of persistence, decide, well, I'm not going to go a notch lower. I'm going to go a notch higher. And so I would submit it to an even better journal, in fact, a top journal. And I would keep working on the article, on the research, until I was able to get it accepted at really the best journal that was out there. Those behaviors do pay. Persistence does pay off. I was able to get all of my articles published, not just at the B-grade journals, but at the best journals. I was awarded my Ph.D. degree from Michigan State University. I have failed time and time and time again in my life, and I found that there really is one factor that makes a huge difference, and that factor turns out to be persistence, something that, as it turns out, I do very, very well indeed. When I would train PhD students, my students, to be able to earn their PhDs once I was awarded the status of a faculty member, the one thing I would tell them is the one thing they needed to be able to get through their programs was to persist, to never quit. And that was always true. The people who would get discouraged early on because of being asked to do something again and quit, well, obviously never finished. But those that were determined to finish their programs always did. It was always the case that anybody who persisted was able to prevail and to be awarded their PhD degree. So I want to say that although I struggle with some of the other steps personally, and although this program that I have developed is a program that I've also been working on for myself, persistence is indeed something that I do very, very well. Now, how is this then a challenge for you in being able to overcome some of the challenges that you confront in pursuing therapies and modalities and possibilities for yourself and being able to recover from the symptoms of Parkinson's? Let me explain why persistence is so critical of the five steps that are required for recovery in the context of two therapies, two general categories of therapies that I invite everybody to consider as possibilities. The first general area of possibilities is in the area of detoxing your body from toxins, heavy metals, pesticides, who knows what might be inside there. There is currently posted on the Parkinson's blog, which is essentially the address www.blog.parkinsonsrecovery.com. There's posted a miraculous, wonderful, amazing, marvelous story of a man who essentially persisted, and although essentially started with a number of different therapies, persisted after having many setbacks and frustrations and pursued the area of detoxing his body. He's got details about exactly what he did that should be very helpful to anybody, but he has succeeded in being able to attain relief from his symptoms. He's not symptom free, but he's moving in that direction. So it's a marvelous story that I invite you to be sure and check out on the Parkinson's blog. Now, what is the issue with anybody who pursues a detox problem? And of course, the issue is that when you start a detox program, it's very likely that no matter what avenue you've pursued, no matter how you're going about doing your detoxing, you probably are going to begin to feel worse before you feel better. Now, this is not always the case, but when we begin to detox, the substances in our body that are not supposed to be there, the body does begin to send signals that it's not feeling well. So the symptoms of detoxing tend to be a slight nausea, you can be headachy, you can be very, very, very tired. And so it feels like when you start a detox program, you're actually getting worse. If you are a person that is determined that if you're going to start anything, you have to feel better, a recovery program is going to be a true challenge. If you really want to always essentially never feel worse, no matter what you try, probably the better alternative is a lot of the medications out there that are more numbing, that are more masking symptoms. Those medications can also have harmful side effects, but it may be that when you take them, you're not going to feel worse, and it's also possible that you will actually feel a little bit better, if not a lot better, especially in the short term. So there are alternatives for people who just don't want to have a spell where they're beginning to feel uncomfortable or worse. That does happen with detox programs. With detox programs, the tendency is you do feel a little bit worse before you feel better, and we always encourage people, no matter what program they choose, to do it as tenderly and as gently as possible so that those uncomfortable side effects do not creep in and make life truly miserable for you. Let me now move and shift to the second area that can also be a true challenge, and that's the general area of finding ways to relieve tension, stress, and trauma from your physical body. Trauma and stress and tension that's housed inside the physical cells. This can also be a true and genuine challenge when we decide what we're going to do is to confront the traumas and stress that we have experienced in our life. Now, what also tends to happen is when any of this work is done, a person may feel wonderful afterward and feel a great relief in their physical bodies. They'll get energy, they'll be able to do things that they have never been able to do before. Their movements are fluent, their speech is loud and assertive, their attitudes are positive, and they are joyful and happy. that is a possible outcome of an approach of attempting to release trauma and stress. And you can do that through a wide variety of elective choices. John Coleman talks about something called Bowen therapy, which is a body therapy. We, through Parkinson's Recovery, have a staff who do something called cranial sacral therapy. That's a very light energy approach to inviting the body to unwind and release stress and tension. There are other approaches and other therapies that are also intended and designed to help people be able to release stress and relieve tension in their physical bodies. Now, when cranial sacral work is done, the approach is to follow the body. Tension and trauma is trapped in the physical body, and our physical presence shows the manifestation of that in the way that we carry ourselves. If you ever look closely at a person when they're standing, you'll oftentimes notice that they are not standing up straight, that there are twists in their body, that there may be a side of the body that is centrally sorted up to the sky. There is another body of the body that is sunk down to the ground or to the earth. In other words, they are slanted either to the left or to the right. One shoulder is higher than the other. If you look at people's faces, oftentimes there is a lack of symmetry. That is, one face, part of the face, is actually less muscular than another. Oftentimes, eyes are not level. Oftentimes, a nose can be crunched to the left or to the right side. Oftentimes, ears can also be unbalanced. These physical abnormalities are a function of traumas that we have experienced in our lives. They may be a function of accidents that may have occurred, physical accidents that have created physical harm to our bodies. They can also be created by emotional trauma. And those emotional traumas can create significant tension and stress that is exhibited in our physical bodies. So basically, bodies get crunched up. They get wound up. And that's one of the reasons why the neurological system gets so contaminated. Those neural networks can't fire efficiently because literally there is a twisting of the body that makes the physical firing a challenge. And again, that's why what we call body work, regardless of what you might choose to pursue, can be so helpful and useful. Body work is an invitation to release what tension and stress has been wrapped up physically in the tissues of the human body. So the body literally begins to unwind. A nice way to understand what happens in the body is to think about what happens with a wash rag when it is wet and twisted. And then set aside to dry. That wash rag essentially then will tend to become a solid piece of material. That's the same thing that happens to the body. The tissues in the body, when they have been traumatized, literally wind up just like a wet wash rag, and then they are allowed to dry, and they essentially are set. They literally are set physically in the human body. That, again, is a significant obstruction to the efficient functioning of our neural network system, our intricate neural network system, I might add. When trauma is released from the body using the therapies that I've just discussed, it can create a sense of discomfort emotionally. Motions may come up that have not been felt before, and so I cannot report that the aftermath experience may necessarily be one of joy and bliss and happiness. People can have memories that they haven't had for many, many years of events that occurred many years ago. All of that is present after the work is done to be released. That is, that's why it's come up. The feelings are there to essentially wash through you so that they are no longer held in your tissues. And the memories are there for you to simply be able to acknowledge them. They are incomplete experiences in your life, and so by remembering them, you are allowing that experience to have full completion, to wash through the tissues of your body and to be done so that you can move on with your life. When stress and trauma is trapped in our physical bodies, it's important to release it. And in so doing, the tissues in the body also relax. When a person receives body work or cranial sacral work over a several month period of time, their physical presence actually changes. The good news is that a motivation that I think is one I've always had for being able to do body work is that you become younger. You literally begin to look younger physically. And the more work you get, the younger you actually look. When we actually do this kind of work for people or on people, we also, the ones doing it, we also look younger and become younger. It's quite amazing in terms of the true effect of the work. Now, the point of all of this is, if you choose to pursue this route, if you decide, yes, I believe my symptoms are really being aggravated by a lot of stress and trauma that I have experienced in my life, and I would like to be able to release that so that I am no longer holding that in the tissues of my body, you are likely also choosing a path where you're going to be seeing and feeling emotions that you haven't been feeling or seeing recently. And again, that's not necessarily pleasant, but it doesn't, the good news is it doesn't last a long time. It can fly through your body pretty quickly. And once it flies through, it resolves. It's no longer present. And then there is this movement into true elation and happiness. The body begins to move much more fluidly. If there has been pain which has been felt in the body, that is subsided and becomes much more tolerable, if not absent. There are results of body work that are quite marvelous to report. It's not like taking a pill. A pill will numb you. This is just the reverse. When you actually do this kind of work, you will find you will go on a journey of healing, and with any journey of healing, it is often the case that you sometimes do feel worse for a period of time before you begin to feel a lot better. This is a long way of explaining why persistence is such an important step in the five steps of recovery. Let's say that you decide you'd like to be able to try out and experiment with a body work of one type or another, and let's say it's just what you choose to pursue is cranial sacral work. It is possible that you'll go to a cranial sacral therapist and you explain what symptoms you have or the one activity that you would like to manifest. Perhaps it's being able to walk gracefully on your daily walks in your neighborhood. And the cranial sacral therapist then works for a period of 45 minutes to an hour in inviting you to release tension from your body. And it could be when you complete that work and find yourself the next day, it may be that taking that walk on that particular day may be actually a bit more of a challenge than it was the day before. And you may be thinking to yourself, wait a minute. Is this the right therapy for me to pursue or not? I don't know whether this is working for me or not. Well, if you are committed to be able to release tension and trauma from your body, be patient. and allow whatever feelings are present to emerge so that they can essentially be released and forgotten. And what you'll discover is that with attention and dedication to that kind of work, you will be able to walk more fluidly on your walks, little by little, day by day. It does take persistence, and it does take a willingness to acknowledge that on a journey of healing, it is rocky, and you will be having periods of time when you are not feeling better and better and better. So if your aspiration is every day to feel significantly better, that will be a challenge because there will be some days when you're not going to feel significantly better. In fact, there may be some days when you feel worse. But again, that in the context of the big picture is actually what is necessary for you to be able to get well and recover from the symptoms of Parkinson's. It is the healing journey, and especially when traumas are rooted in emotionally, as is the case with many physical traumas as well as emotional traumas, there typically is an emotional component to that. And so when that begins to be released, those emotions are released, and that's not necessarily nice to feel. But it's a great thing for that to be able to come up, because when it is, and when you can actually feel through all of that, again, the word I want to use is, it is released. And as it is released, it clears out all the wrapping in, the tightness, the tension that is being held in your body, so that the cells can nourish themselves, they can renew themselves, so that all of that neural network can come back online and function as it was originally designed to function. Persistence then is important to be simply confronted with information that you're not doing as well today as yesterday, can call for two responses. One is, I give up. It must be true that I'm going to always get worse. Or the second response is to persist and say, I'll never give up. I'll never give up. Over my dead body, will I ever, ever give up? Persistence, then, is really, I think, a key component of the recovery process. So it doesn't matter really what happens in your decisions for what therapies or modalities or approaches that you'd like to pursue. With persistence, if one doesn't work, you can always shift over to something else, and sticking with it, find something that works. In terms of making decisions about what works, then that presents a rather interesting challenge for everyone. The challenge is, let's say that you've elected to experiment with a particular therapy. You go to that therapy and you are feeling worse. And so the question is, well, wait a minute, should I persist with this therapy, or is this therapy actually doing me a good service? Should I continue with it? In other words, the confusion that arises in the recovery process is a confusion over whether or not it really would be a wise decision to switch over into another type of therapy because the therapy that you've pursued for yourself is not working well, or would it really be the better decision to persist with the therapy that you've actually selected in the first place? It can be a true challenge to be able to sort that out, especially if you're not feeling well. Everybody confronts that challenge. And so the question is, how do you sort that out, especially if you're not feeling well? I have an approach that I want to introduce to you, something you could consider for being able to sort through that particular question. And I'm going to explain how you can go about doing just this. It is an approach for listening to your body and the wisdom of your body day by day, moment to moment, and doing that in an easy, comfortable way. I have talked before about muscle testing, and many of you probably have experience with muscle testing. there are many intricate and complicated ways of being able to do muscle testing. For example, much of muscle testing that is discussed in the internet and even by healthcare practitioners requires a second person to help you do the muscle testing. And some of the procedures are you hold out your arm and the person helping you will push your arm down after you ask a very specific question. For example, let's say that I had a question just this week about a person who has been seeing a Bowen therapist now for 7 occasions and they have been unable to determine whether or not it's helping or not. So one of the approaches this person could take would be to get a friend and put their arm, either their right or their left arm, straight out from their body so that their arm is level to the ground. And then what they could do is to say out loud, "My Bowen therapy is helping me to recover," and then ask their friend to push their arm down toward the ground. Now, if there is a great deal of resistance when the friend pushes the arm down to the ground, it means the body is saying, yes, the Bowen therapy is helping you. You may not realize it, but stick with it. This is a good plan. If your friend pushes the arm down and it has very little resistance and your arm wants to flop all the way down to the floor, it means your body is saying, no, 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 this is not the right therapy for you. You need to look for another approach or another therapy. This is just not working. So that's one of the ways that bodies can be asked for the information about whether or not this is the right thing for them or not. Now remember, we're getting out of our minds and we're asking for the wisdom of the body to tell us whether or not this is a good idea or not. Now, for those of you that have explored these options, you've probably found through just casual searches, either in the library or talking with friends or on the internet, that there are countless other ways of doing muscle testing for yourself without getting the assistance of another person. We can do it for ourselves when we can do it at any time. There is a way that I want to give you today that you likely have never heard about, but it's one that is so, so neat because you can do it any time of the day or night around anyone and people don't even know that you're doing it. It's just such a cool way of doing muscle testing. So I want to explain that to you now so that you'll get a sense of what it does, and you can also experiment here throughout the rest of the week and be able to really see your own sensitivity so that you'll know what information you're getting when you do this particular test. It only requires that you use 2 fingers and 1 thumb on either your right hand or your left hand. So if you're listening on the phone, hopefully you have a hand that's free, and if you're looking on the computer, you have 2 hands. You can use both hands if you want, but 1 hand is really all that's necessary. And what I want to invite you to do is to take your thumb, your pointing finger, and your index finger. In other words, your thumb and the 2 fingers that are closest to your thumb, and essentially take your thumb and rub it over those first two fingers. Just rub it in a circle. You can do that right now. We haven't asked your body anything. And essentially what you'll notice is, as I do that myself, it's very smooth. That is, I don't have much sticky resistance when I'm moving my thumb across the index and pointing finger. Now, the way this works is the following. If you were to take a substance that you know is harmful to you and put it in your other hand, a good substance actually is a battery. No, I don't think the acid in batteries is a good substance for anyone. A battery, or particularly useful, is finding a food that you know that you are allergic to. Just simply take that food and in a package or in its raw form and put it in your other hand And then, with the hand that we were just experimenting with, move your finger across your thumb, across your index and your pointing finger, and see whether or not there's any stickiness to that. If there's stickiness to that, it means, no, this substance is not good for your body. This is bad for your body. And if it's smooth, it means, yes, this is really good. This is a good, this is good for you. So by taking something that you know is not helpful to your body and putting that in your other hand, you can get a real sense of how sticky it can feel instantly. It's quite incredible, I might add. Your resistance, it feels clammy and it feels sticky whenever you are addressing something that's not good for your body. So your body basically is talking to you in that way. And with just a little practice, you'll be able to really feel the difference. So once you get a sense of what that difference is, then as you do this muscle testing on yourself, you'll be able to know whether or not a particular therapy is a good therapy for you or not. So to be able to give you an experience of how this particular muscle testing works, now that you've had a chance to essentially put your thumb across those two fingers and you know how it works, and you can well acknowledge how easy this is to do when you might be out anywhere in public. Nobody really knows that you're actually doing the muscle testing. Let me give you a sense of what it is that you can do for yourself to ask the question, is this therapy something that I should pursue or not? So get settled, get set, get relaxed, take in a breath in and a breath out, just so you can relax whatever tension might be present for yourself now. Being able to go into a place where you can set the intention to ask your body for the answers. For your body always knows what it is that it needs. Our job is to be able to remember to ask our bodies what it is that it needs. The challenge, of course, is that the answers can change day by day so that what the body needs today may be different from what the body needs tomorrow, which is why learning how to muscle test our body for the answers can be so, so helpful, because then we are always communicating with the wisdom of our body moment to moment. And then, once we get the answers, we know when we need to persist and when we need to essentially make a different decision. By persist, I want to say we're persisting with experimenting on whatever therapies are needed to be able to help feel better. So the persistence is in the actions. It is in making decisions for yourself about what you can do to feel better. And the second part of the persistence is, once a therapy is selected, whether or not to stick with it or find another therapist or find another therapy. So there are basically two steps to persistence that need to be acknowledged. So another breath, just relax now, settle into your chair or wherever you might be listening to this discussion now. Take another breath, and with a focus of attention on the air, especially as it leaves your body, and allowing yourself just to settle in now. Taking your thumb and your two fingers and having them ready, because we're going to start asking your body some questions. Think back now, either recently or over the last year or two, about a therapy that you have selected for yourself to pursue. The therapy might be a prescription medication. The therapy might be an exercise routine. The therapy might be a psychologist or a counselor that you have decided to see. The therapy might be body work, like Bowen or cranial sacral therapy. The therapy might be exercise of a certain character or nature. The therapy might be eating a certain type of food that you were told should help. The therapy might be taking a specific supplement that was recommended by an internet source or by a friend. Think back on a therapy, whatever that therapy might have been, that you still have questions about. You still wonder, should I still be doing that or not? Now, whether or not you decided to continue or discontinue the therapy, with your intention, focus and concentrate on that particular therapy now. Ask the question, once you have that therapy in mind, doing whatever the therapy is for yourself, is a good choice for my body. And then muscle test. Take your thumb and rub it against those two fingers and see how that feels. Do that right now. And just ask the question again as a double check. Doing my whatever therapy it is that you have in mind is a good choice for my body. I need to continue doing this. And again, just take your thumb and your two fingers and rub them together and be sensitive to how it feels now. Is it smooth? Or is it clammy? If it's smooth, it's a great idea for you, and you need to continue it. If it's clammy, it's not a good idea for you, and it would be important to consider discontinuing it and looking for another therapy, perhaps a complementary therapy. You can now do this for a second therapy of choice, whatever that might be, something that you really couldn't figure out whether it helped or not, whether it was eating or exercise or going to a counselor or going to body work or a detox program, whatever it might have been that you were pursuing, and whatever thoughts you might have about whether or not that therapy was a good idea or a bad idea, go ahead and ask the question as it comes to mind, okay, is doing fill-in-the-therapy, or is taking fill-in-the-therapy, or is doing fill-in-the-therapy what my body needs now? You can ask that out loud or with your thoughts, and then simply muscle test with the thumb over those two fingers and see how it feels. Do that for a second therapy and see what result you get. Trust that your body will give you the information. Your body always knows what the answer is, and this is another clever, powerful way of being able to get information from your body about what it needs. We get ourselves out of our minds and connect with the wisdom of the body when we muscle test. This way of muscle testing is no big hurdle. It's no big deal, so that we can always muscle test any question in this way hundreds of times a day if we want. The answer may be in between yes and no. The feeling may be part clammy, part not clammy, and that is what the body probably is telling you. If it's not totally clammy and sticky, but somewhere between sticky and clear and smooth, then it may be the body could use it, but it's not necessarily the best thing for your body right now. In other words, there's an in-between that the body will, an in-between answer that your body will give to you when you do this particular test. Try it out for size. And when you do get the answer, yes, my body needs this, be sure to activate that precious fifth step that is so essential to being able to manifest recovery, and that is to persist. Even if in your mind you're saying it's making me feel worse, if your body is saying, I need this, then your body does need this. The muscle testing systems that I just showed you is a way of getting out of your mind and your thinking and into the wisdom of the body. It's a way of connecting with what your body actually needs. And it's a way of honoring the importance of persistence so that we know how terribly important it is when we set a course to be able to recover that we stay on track with that particular course. Now, I just want to summarize the five steps so that everybody is clear about what it is that is required to be able to recover. A concentrated focus of your thoughts are essential. When you're wishy-washy and flop from one desire or one want to another, it will not work. Our thoughts do manifest physical reality only when we have a concentration of the same thought. If we have many, many, many different thoughts, that doesn't create the power to be able to manifest in physical form. So focus is required. And I've presented some meditations that you can continue to do every day that will strengthen the discipline of focus for you. The second step is, once you have set in motion what it is that you most finally desire, detail that out. Make sure that it becomes absolutely clear in every respect so that you know exactly what it will feel like, what it will look like, what it will hear like. You know everything about what it is that you want to accomplish for yourself. So in terms of movement, if the question is to become a person who can move fluidly, then be very clear for yourself about exactly what you want that to look like. Do you want to be able to run marathons? Do you want to be able to look like a ballerina dancer? Do you want to be able to move effortlessly as you play with your children or your neighbor or your grandchildren? What do you want that to look like? And be sure to detail it out. What do your movements physically look like? How do they feel? How do you want them to feel? And again, this is not how they feel now, but what it is that you wish to manifest. And we've provided in the previous teleseminars some very specific guidance on some ways that you can actually see what this future will look like. The third and an essential step of recovery is to stay on track, to stay with it, not to waver on the course that you have set for yourself. So that if you've set your intention to be able to move with fluidity, then it's important that you not switch off into another desire or another thought or another wish. It's important that you stay on track with that particular dream and wish. The fourth is, and this is often a challenge for people, to keep the faith that it will happen. In other words, if you're now struggling with freezing problems or movement problems, if it's difficult for you to stand up or sit down or get in a car or walk, then you may be thinking, well, here it is to stay. So it's important to keep the faith that there are people out there in the universe that are recovering, that are becoming more fluid, that are being able to walk with ease. They are doing things that are making it possible to help their bodies heal. That's really one of the main purposes of Parkinson's recovery, is to document the stories of people who are recovering, who are feeling better. That is one of our key purposes, is to identify everything people are doing that are making a difference so that you can hear people talk about what they're doing and to know that, yes, they are feeling better. They're not getting worse. They are getting better. So it's important to keep the faith. And fifth, as we've just discussed today, persistence, to stick with it. Over my dead body, will I ever give up? Will I ever give up? I have actually recorded a whole series of daily meditations for each of these five steps. There's a weekly meditation, and there are daily meditations for each of the five steps to recovery. And you can get in and listen to those. The second week is playing now, the week on materialization. The first week is already played. The third week will be on next week, which is, of course, to stay on track. So you'll be able to listen to those and help yourself get stronger with each of these steps. You can get access into the member website by clicking on the link, which you'll see right there as you're looking at your computer screen, where it says Support for Recovery. You simply click on that link, and what you'll come to is a login page. And what I invite you to do is just to put in the login name Persist, PERSIST, that's the login name, and then put in the secret password, which is 1234. So to get in there, to be able to begin listening to these meditations that provide you with the support that's going to be helpful for you to be able to get on track with your recovery program, you can do that by getting into the member website and listening to some of the meditations that I've recorded. There are daily meditations, and then for each of these five steps, there is a whole weekly meditation that's about 30 minutes that allows you to go into a place of being able to detail out what it is that you, in fact, would like to materialize for yourself in terms of your want or your wish. It is possible to recover. It's not easy, to be sure, but it is possible to recover as long as you can be attentive and disciplined and do it every single day. It does work. These particular steps are what you'll find out there whenever you hear anybody talking about manifesting anything, whether it's manifesting money, whether it's manifesting a partner, whether it's manifesting health. Here, I have applied these steps specifically to recovering from the symptoms of Parkinson's. I want to say there's no mystery but that these steps work. They do work. They will succeed. It is not easy, though. It does take some commitment and discipline to be able to set the course, to be able to make it happen. But I assure you that it will and does happen. I do have good news to report about what's coming next week. On Tuesday, I have a teleseminar, which is quite exciting, with Kevin Lockett. Now, when you get into the member website, if you haven't been in there already, Kevin is the physical therapist who does the physical exercises on the member website. He's there every day doing a physical exercise. It only lasts a minute or two. We've discovered that just doing a minute or two of physical exercise makes a huge difference in how people feel. So that's an invitation for everyone to do a little physical exercise every day. Believe me, it makes a big difference. Now, Kevin has worked with people who have the symptoms of Parkinson's for many, many years. He said, I think it's 20 years, and much of what he does with people now, he has learned from his patients. That's the true confession that he gave to me when we talked earlier last week. He basically said that a lot of the exercises that he's created have actually been inspired by working with his patients over the last 20 years. So if you have questions about exercises, about movement issues for you, about exercises that would be good for you to do, he truly is an international expert with a specific expertise on the challenges that people with the symptoms of Parkinson's have. That teleseminar is up for Tuesday, and it'll be first thing in the morning Pacific time at 8 o'clock. It'll actually be 6 o'clock his time because he lives in Hawaii. Ask your questions on the teleseminar page. If you're unable to actually connect in live with the teleseminar, I'll be sure and ask whatever questions that you ask on the question page, and you can listen to the recording later, to the teleseminar recording later. And, of course, you can also listen to the recording of this teleseminar by simply clicking right after we finish. The replay recording is available instantly right after we're done, which is one of the wonderful services that this teleseminar company does for me. The recording is done instantly. The last piece of information that I've got for you, actually the exciting information I've got, is that the interviews with all of the 14 pioneers of recovery the recordings have been mastered now professionally, and those will soon be available to be listened to. And the book, Pioneers of Recovery print book, is copy is available for me this afternoon to preview. So I'm going to go to the publishers this afternoon and do a check of the proof of the book, and then we're going to go to press, and so we'll be able to have that available for you here probably late next week. So the Pioneers of Recovery print book will soon be available for a purchase. I've had a lot of people ask me questions about that, and so finally that's out. You can obtain the downloadable version of the Pioneers of Recovery. In other words, that's a version that you can download to your computer. The disadvantage is you can't hold it in your hot hands and curl up in front of a fire during this winter season. The advantage is that as you look at the text on the computer, you'll be able to click on all of the links. There, everything is linked throughout the entire book. So whenever there's a reference to a website or an individual or a term you may not be familiar with, you can click on that. It'll take you to an informational site or the website that was actually listed in the interview, and you'll get additional information that way. So it's a useful resource from a research point of view to be able to get all of that access to all of that information. It is a long book. It's 364 pages, although it includes a long table of contents and a relatively long index because there were so many terms that were used. But it's many pages of rich and useful information, interviews with individuals who have Parkinson's talking about what it is that they did to get symptom relief, and then 7 interviews with individuals who are healthcare practitioners. People who are psychologists, aromatherapists, herbalists, people who are working with individuals with Parkinson's who have great wisdom about what treatments might provide symptom relief. It's really rich in terms of suggestions. Clearly, there's not one theme here about what you need to do, because there are so many different possibilities and ideas of what you could consider doing. The good news is a number of them don't cost anything, and a number of them, while they may cost something, the cost is very modest. So that if in your muscle testing, as we've talked about today, if you are called to pursue any of them, you'll find that the expense is in most of what is discussed is very modest. The healthcare practitioners have given their phone numbers and contact information and really are open and available to have phone calls, and I'm sure would be happy to answer questions. A number of them are very well-known and famous people, so it may take you a bit to connect with them, but I encourage you to, if you have additional questions, to contact them and ask your questions. You can get them answered. That's one of the great advantages of dealing with people who really care about doing something for others. So the information is rich. The purchase of the actual hard copy book is more expensive than I had hoped, because it's in color. The printer asked me if I needed to have it in black and white or color, and I said, no, it's got to be in color, because it's illustrated throughout with pictures. And so the cost of the book, actually printing the hard copy of the book, is very high, but we set a price as low as we could, which is $59.95. But when you actually purchase the hard copy book, which again is not available today, but it will be after they get them off the presses next week, when you actually purchase the hard copy, you'll also be able to get a downloadable version. In other words, that will come coupled with the hard copy book. So you'll get the advantage of being able to curl up in front of the fire, or also be able to read the book on the internet. It's a wonderful resource of information, full of ideas that I want to say I haven't heard or seen myself. I was surprised by how many rich and fascinating suggestions people gave of things that had helped either themselves or have helped their clients. So I've learned a great deal in doing these interviews myself about the many different alternatives that are available that are out there. The one revelation I've had is there are many, many different opportunities and possibilities out there that are working for people. The number keeps growing every week that I work, every week that I do research. I'm adding to the number of possibilities, which, of course, is why it is so, so critical that you begin to learn how to communicate with your body so that you can figure out what therapies and what modalities are going to be most useful for you. When you read any one of the interviews with the pioneers of recovery, it's quite encouraging and quite motivating because it's very clear that people are feeling better. And listening to the interviews is another experience too, because that's almost a different experience than reading the interviews, because you can tell that that people have really found ways to make a big difference in their lives. But of course, the reality is it might have made a huge difference to them, but whether or not it makes a difference to you is really up to you and your own body. So you have to continuously be communicating with your body. I invite you to do the muscle testing that we talked about today, or if that's not working for you, there are many, many other ways of muscle testing that we've discussed in some of our prior blogs on the Parkinson's blog, or that you can find on the internet. Find a way of muscle testing that works for you. I haven't listed all of the different suggestions that have been given in the Pioneers of Recovery. It's very, very long indeed. There are a lot of possibilities. You would not be able to do all of these, I can guarantee you. I mean, life is not long enough, and resources are not rich enough to be able to pursue all of them. Because, of course, if you're pursuing any particular single, for example, bodywork modality, that chances are is going to be an every 2 week or every 3 week kind of an activity for a while. So the fact is that we've only got so much energy and time and resources to do so many things. And so there has to be choices made about what to pursue. The good news is that there are many choices out there that are helping people. And so the challenge for you is to make a decision on what it is that would be most helpful to you to pursue. People that are feeling better are experimenting. They are out there trying things. They are doing it. They are committed to being able to find ways to feel better. And they are feeling better. So the keys to the five steps of recovery are golden. They work. The key is to focus, to detail out what it is that you'd like to be able to accomplish in your life with regard to recovering from Parkinson's, to be positive about that. It's important that you not focus on what you do not want, that you rather focus on what you do want. And so see that picture. See it the way you would like it for it to be, and it will become so. It's important that you stay on track and that you dedicate yourself, you focus yourself to doing work every day that's necessary to be able to realize and manifest your dream. It's important to keep the faith that, yes, it will happen, regardless of what you may hear or see from other people. And it's important, as we've talked about today, to persist, to never give up. So on the access that I just gave you to the Parkinson's Recovery website, where you use the username persist and the password 1234, that's an experience that can be a new experience for you every day. You go into that particular website, and what you'll see every day is new information, a new exercise, a new recipe, a new word of hope, a new meditation, both for the day and for the week. Everything is new, and so it's a way of focusing your attention on your recovery process. That particular design for me was created because it felt to me like every day-to-day support would help people be able to recover, because we all get discouraged. And if you make it a discipline and a habit to essentially visit that every day, My idea, my vision is that that really will help your recovery. My commitment to you publicly here on this this fifth of the five steps is to say I am going to commit myself to the first 100 study. I will persist. I will never give up. It will happen. I will make it happen one way or another, and I will stay focused on making that happen. Many of you have actually already signed up, and as you know, we don't have funding for this. It's going to take millions and millions of dollars to be able to pay for the therapies and the research that will be needed. But that will come. That support will come. It's just a question of time and being able to set it up so that it will be an experience that will be useful for you and the results will be meaningful for everyone out there who has an interest in Parkinson's. So I'm on, this is Thursday morning, I'm on every Thursday morning at 11 o'clock Pacific time. I'll be here next week with questions and answers, talking about what it is that you can do to recover from Parkinson's. Thank you very much for being here with me today on my Thursday session. If you have a story of recovery that you'd like to share, please let me know. I would be most interested in making sure we get the word out. You can contact me always at robert@parkinsonsrecovery.com. My phone numbers and emails and websites are make me publicly available at all times. And that is what is happening at Parkinson's Recovery. On the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the men are handsome, all the women are smart, and all the children are loved. Know that you are on the road to recovery. Good day.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end. Welcome to the conferencing service. Please enter your conference ID followed by the pound sign.